You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cook, joined by my co-host Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we're going to go over the news and notes around baseball, cover player performances from this past week, and, of course, give us some streaming recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well, but I'm not doing as well as your Twins. It seems like they are catching fire a little bit. It only takes a couple game win streak to get back into the AL wild card conversation right now, and they're back in it now. So how are you feeling?
I mean, on Monday, they were three games out of the last wild card spot, and now they're currently on a four game winning streak, I believe, after sweeping the Rangers. Although it was kind of like a weird series, because I think they played Monday, Tuesday, had Wednesday off, and then played the Rangers again on Thursday. So a little bit of a strange three-game series, but nonetheless, feels good. Mike Abel's coming back potentially pretty soon. Yonadris Gomez is the hottest closer in baseball, apparently, or at least the hottest closer for the Twins, because I think he's now up to like seven saves or something like that, which I believe probably leads the team because they've set the record, at least in Twins history, for the number of relievers who picked up a save. So I'm not necessarily optimistic about the team because of the Twins after all, but it is fun to be on a little bit of a win streak here.
Yes, I'm not wowed by Gomez's skills, but I added him in Fab on Sunday night and he got me a save on Monday in a league where I desperately need saves, so he's all right in my book so far.
Yeah, there we go. Shout out to just a team full of guys, or specifically a bullpen full of guys who I didn't know played baseball before this season. So that's that. And of course, like, we're running the hot streak with Ryan Kreider at shortstop, who I'm sure is a household name for everyone. So it's a weird time for Twins baseball.
Getting the most out of what you might not be too wowed by on the on paper.
Exactly. Yeah. How are the fantasy streets going for you these days?
I would say pretty good overall. I feel like all of my teams are doing at least decently. I think maybe only one league where I'm in first place. But, yeah, shaping up like I'm going to be in the thick of things, in all my leagues. But maybe not, first place in too many or not really competing in any overalls. But overall, I would say pretty good. The Cruz and Rooker injuries definitely hurting me a little bit from last week. So I'm just trying to weather those storms, but I think I've at least mostly dodged bullets of this week because I know a lot more guys have gone down already in the last few days. So yeah, it's tough, but just sticking and moving and trying to keep moving up the standings.
Yeah, Chase DeLauder was one of my guys that went down this week. Rooker, as you mentioned, went down last week. Did get Kyle Raleigh back, which is nice, but one of the teams I have him on, I also have Dylan Dingler, which makes it a little tough because Dingler's been really solid. And then it's a one util league, and I also have Shohei Ohtani, so it's kind of this weird scenario where I'm like, do I start Dingler over Raleigh? That feels wrong, but Dingler right now has had a much better season than Cal, and I obviously can't start Cal over Shohei, so it's going to be one of those interesting roster situations that I'm going to have to figure out over the next week or so until maybe Dingler falls off, and then it makes sense to keep Cal in the catcher spot.
Yeah, maybe up with some trade talks if we can too.
Right, exactly. So there's still time for that. Before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. As you mentioned, quite a few big names hit the injured list this week. We're going to start with Mike Trout, who is going on the 10-day IL with the right hamstring strain. This seems to be more of a precautionary move for the Angels. They kind of expect a minimum stay for him. And honestly, probably if they thought it was just a tiny bit better, it's probably a good chance he wouldn't have actually hit the list. But Mike Trout's going to be out for about a week or so. As we mentioned, Chase DeLauder currently out with a rib fracture. Initially, they thought he was actually going to play through it, but eventually they did put him on the injury list. So that's just something to track about DeLauder. The one thing with DeLauder, too, is that he did have a really hot start to the season, but has really cooled off since that point. So maybe this is just a nice reset for him, and he can get back to hitting homers when he comes back. Max Scherzer is going to 15-day IL with back spasms. Of course, he hit his milestone, 3,500 strikeouts. But other than that, it's been a pretty forgettable season for Scherzer. But yeah, just another move for Toronto, who just seems to not have any healthy pitchers at all. From just can't fill a rotation at all with five healthy guys. Gleyber Torres going on the 10-day IL with a left oblique strain. This is actually a re-injury for him, so expect him to be out probably at least for a month as he recovers from that. Kind of unfortunate for him, he has not had a very good season this year. Injuries probably played a little bit of the reason why, but nonetheless, yeah, it's been kind of disappointing if you had him in fantasy. Daniel Palencia going on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. Super fortunate for him there. He was on the IL earlier this year, came back, but now is back on the injured list with an elbow issue, which you never love to hear for pitchers. Angel Martinez going on the 10-day IL with a broken foot, expected to be out for at least a month, if not longer. And he had a really solid season this year. Had second base and outfield eligibility in most leagues. Was a really decent contributor. I think had double-digit homers. Had cooled off a little bit as of recent, but still was a really good contributor at second base in most fantasy teams. So unfortunate to see him out. Randy Arozarena going on the 10-day IL with a strained hamstring. And then this happened, I believe, last week or earlier this week, actually. Jose Ramirez and Vinny Pasquantino both dealing with hamate fractures based on that broken bone in the hand, which a bunch of people earlier this season also dealt with. So, you know, who's this? Who knows how quick their return's going to be? You could be, you know, returning like in the form of Jackson Chourio, who's been really, really solid, or Jackson Holliday, who has not been very good since his return. But yeah, a lot of injuries, as you mentioned, a couple big names for sure, and guys that are starting probably in all depths of leagues, not just, you know, their 12 or 15 teamers.
Yep, second base position definitely gets a little thinner with, you know, Gleyber and Martinez going down, even though neither one is premium options, and a lot of outfield injuries here too. And then J-Ram, yeah, that's a tough one. First round guy going down. I think he's dealt with this injury in his other hand before, you know, as a switch hitter. So clearly he returned from it okay eventually. But yeah, we'll see, you know, in the short term if he's able to heal quick and get back on the field, because I know the managers that have him will desperately be wanting to get him back in there.
Yeah, I think the timeline there might be 6 weeks at least. I mean, I know for sure All-Star break, but now we're, you know, kind of mid to late June. So, you know, we're only really looking at 3 to 4 weeks here till the All-Star break. So probably, you know, end of July is maybe when you'd start to expect to, you know, see J-Ram back at least in the majors.
Yep, and I think, you know, stream ahead, you know, all streams go against Cleveland at this point with him out and Martinez out too. Obviously Ramirez is the bigger loss there, but he's really the, you know, the best bat in their lineup and the lauder too. That's three, you know, three starters right there. So big blow in Cleveland.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of returns from the injury list, I already mentioned Cal Raleigh. He batted second in all three games since his return. Played two games at catcher, one at DH. Drake Baldwin back, also catcher. Homered in his first at bat, so good for him. Gives that Atlanta team much needed depth at catcher because they had been trotting out a bunch of just dudes. I believe like Sandy Leon, we've made that joke a couple times, was catching for Atlanta. Aaron Civale came back for the A's. 3 innings, 2 strikeouts, 2 walks, 9 hits, and 6 earned runs. He had a nice little run at the beginning of the season before going out with injury, but now, I mean, yes, this is still ill, but I can't see any specific reason to go out and grab him off your waiver wire. Vaughn Grissom has played in 2 games so far for the Angels. He's batted fourth and fifth, so you know has a you know nice little premium spot, I guess, in the Angels lineup. But the Angels lineup is what it is. Obviously, Mike Trout's out now, so. It's hard to say whether Grissom is really going to be any sort of value, even in deep leagues. Tommy Edman, he's also back from the 60-day IL. He went 0 for 4 on Wednesday, batted leadoff and played third base, but he was batting leadoff only because Shohei actually did not bat. It was his day to pitch, and kind of what the Dodgers have been doing from time to time is not putting him in the lineup. And so Edman batted first, but I doubt that that's going to be really a thing that's going to stick for the rest of the season. So just keep an eye on him. Edmund also doesn't have a ton of value anymore. The multi-positional eligibility is nice, but the fact that he's just not stealing too much, you're kind of just relying him on just average and homers. And yes, he, you know, has some decent position eligibility, but I don't know if that's going to be enough to, you know, make him valuable on even like 12 teamers. Ryan Helsley back from the injury list. So, you know, closer leaves and Daniel Palencia, another one comes back in Helsley. He saw action in Wednesday's game, but it wasn't a save situation, I believe. So, you know, did throw 9 pitches, but you know, didn't get any sort of stats from that. Hunter Brown is also back, 5.2 innings, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks, 3 hits, and 1 earned run. You know, looks like he's probably back to being at least like a top 20 pitcher, hopefully. after being out for a bit. So it'll be nice to have him back in the fold. Jamie Crawford also came back from the injury list. He is batting third. Sorry, he's playing third and batting leadoff. Basically sharing shortstop with Colt Everson. So he gets, potentially we'll get some multi-positional eligibility playing third and short. But in terms of actual fantasy value beyond just the positions, it's hard to say whether Crawford is going to be able to offer much there. Yenner Diaz also back. He played in one game, but I expect him to be in the timeshare with Christian Vasquez. So not really any sort of value there in picking him up, unless maybe you're in like a two catcher league, a deep league. Maybe there's some value to have Diaz there. And then Kodai Senga, 4 innings, 5 strikeouts, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 4 home runs in his return. Not positive. Yes, it's still ill, but Senga has really been struggling. Just probably in the last half season, maybe to say. And so it's kind of unfortunate to see him come out. Yes, he got strikeouts, but giving up the runs and the walks is nothing, is definitely what you don't want to see from him.
Yep, the Mets can definitely use some rotation help, but I think for fantasy purposes, we need to see at least one, if not two or three, good outings from Senga before thinking about adding him. And then, yeah, a couple of these guys, great to get them back in your lineups, but not a ton of impactful starting pitching returns besides Hunter Brown. So things are still a little thin out there for sure.
Yeah. So it makes streaming kind of important, but also the streaming landscape is also pretty thin right now with
Gotta be
just with how
careful
it
out
looks.
there,
Yeah.
yeah.
In terms of other injury news, Max Fried, he's scheduled for a bullpen session this weekend. So hopefully he can start his rehab assignment soon. But again, I wouldn't expect him to be back until the All-Star break. Christian Javier threw 68 pitches in his minor league start on Tuesday. Likely will make one more before returning to the majors. Mickey Abel, as I mentioned, he's now up to 61 pitches. That was in his most recent start on Tuesday. Will make one more before returning to the majors. Colt Reagans, he got transferred to the 60-day AL. Had a setback in his rehab process. Not that he was going to be coming back anytime soon, but at least now he's going to be out for probably at least another month, if not longer. And then Spencer Strider also transferred to the 60-day AL. He was shut down from throwing until mid-July, so don't expect a return until mid-August at best. And if that, I would expect probably September for Strider if he even comes back. So it feels like a safe drop probably for Strider, unfortunately, if you still have him on your teams, unless you have like a deep IL format with your rosters. It probably doesn't make sense to have him keep a spot there anymore. And then in terms of other news, Ryan Johnson called up to start against the A's today for the Angels. I don't think he's going to last long on the roster though, based on just past performance. And then Andrew Painter and Ryan Waldschmidt both sent back to AAA. Yeah, both these guys, rookies who for sure will have probably bright futures, but for now, it just is not panning out. Super fortunate for me because I didn't realize Waldschmidt was going down. I know he hadn't been really hot, but I did spend a lot of money on him in Fab for TGFBI, and that has not worked out very well.
Got some steals, but yeah, I think Gurriel came off the IL and he was the odd man out, unfortunately. But I think it's also a case of they'd rather have him play in AAA than, play like twice a week in the big league. So trying to prioritize that development too.
But yeah, some big pitchers and like changing their status in Reagans and Strider, but yeah, unfortunately it's just not for the better. It's for the worse. And it's kind of the hard part with some of these guys who are, really good pitchers, throw really hard, but just have chronic elbow issues, and that's just something you have to deal with. All right, that is it for injury updates. We're going to move on to player performances starting with June 12th, last Friday.
Yep, so on the 12th, Ryan Clark was on our hitter recap with Yordan's three-peat for a three-homer game by Yordan Alvarez. But I'm going to be talking about someone who has not been as good as Yordan all year, but has been on absolute fire lately, and that's Bo Bichette for the Mets. On Friday, he was 2 for 3 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 6 RBI. Easily his best night as a Met with a dominant performance against Atlanta. And it's kind of about time. Bichette struggled, pretty much across the board offensively for almost the first half of the season in his first year as a Met. A 299 OBP is really kind of his worst category. And Ryan feels like every time he writes about a struggling player, he says that maybe this will be the game where they turn things around. But he's not super in on Bichette and has kind of been a low person on him because he does have bad plate discipline. He is a little bit of a free swinger and struggles to get on base consistently. But he's on a really fine heater right now, and I think he's been probably maybe the best hitter in fantasy the last 2 weeks. And this performance actually kicked off a 6-game streak of multi-hit games that I think might be coming to an end tonight as we're talking, but still a great streak. And where do you think he ends up compared to his excellent 2025, where he hit over 300. I think it was 18 homers and around 180 runs in RBI. So definitely lagging behind in the average department compared to last year. But do you think this heater will be enough to get him back on pace with last season? Or do you think that that was more of a high water thing and you know, he's going to regress a pretty significant amount?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is that his counting stats last year like weren't so otherworldly that he can't reach them. 78 runs, 94 RBI, 18 homers. He's like approximately half of that in all his categories. I think average is the one place you mentioned where it is a dip, right? 311 last year, now 254 this year. OBP has also suffered as much basically because of the hitting. But I think he probably could reach those counting stat targets and, you know, probably equal those by the end of the season, right? Like, we're not exactly halfway through the year. We're getting close, but, you know, he's on track to at least beat his run total. The stolen bases, those just don't exist anymore for him, unfortunately. He probably could get to 18 homers at the end of the season. So, yeah, where I think he ends up, I think it's going to be worse than last year because of the dip in average. But I think counting stats-wise, he's probably going to get close to those numbers that he had at the end of 2025.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I think he just has too much ground to try to make up in the batting average department. But everything else is pacing all right. His strikeout rate's up a couple percentage points, but his swing strike rate's not actually up. So I don't think there's any significant skills change there. But yeah, I think that he'll probably end the year in the 270s, maybe 280s if he really goes on a tear. But that will be, you know, a little bit of a step back from the 311 last year. So it is a drop in value for a guy whose batting average is kind of his carrying category. So on the pitching side, on the 12th, Don't Stop By Believin' was Jake Crumpler's SP Roundup. Shout out for Jake for helping out with the SP Roundups these days. But we're not going to talk about Tanner Bibee. I feel like we just have to talk about Jacob Mizorowski and his historic performance in a complete game, Maddux against the Phillies on Friday night. Of course, you got the win with 9 scoreless innings, 1 hit, no walks, and 15 strikeouts, 26 whiffs, 43% CSW on only 95 pitches. Absolutely dominant performance. He set the record for most strikeouts in a Maddux, which of course is a shutout with under 100 pitches thrown. And yeah, he's just racking up accomplishments, racking up accolades. He has a 0.17 ERA across his last 8 starts, lowest ERA in an 8-start span in MLB history. Broke his own record with 12 strikeouts on pitches 100 miles per hour or faster. And he broke another one of his own records, hardest pitch ever by a starter, 104.5 miles per hour, which I believe was a strikeout to Kyle Schwarber. So he's just doing, you know, kind of alien type things. He's our SP1 now on Nick's list. Is he your SP1 too, just given this absolutely dominant, you know, 3-month stretch we've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's clearly right now the best pitcher. I mean, Twix Cool might have something to say about that, but the strikeouts alone for Mizorowski are really impressive. He's got nearly a 40% strikeout rate. But I think what's also impressive is just the kind of the consistency, right? He's at 87 innings over 14 starts. So he's going deeper into games, which is impressive. The strike rate's really, really solid at I believe it's at 67%. 67.4%. So that's why he's able to be so efficient. And I guess really the most positive thing for me is just that his walk rate's not crazy. 6.7% compared to the 11% it was last year. That was always the knock against Mizorowski was his command. And, you know, he's been able to figure it out this year, basically just throwing a bunch of strikes, and it's working out for him really, really well. And I think if he's able to kind of continue that command part of his game, it's just going to be, yeah, really impressive for him. Obviously, he's not going to have a Maddux every game, but if he can at least just stop giving free passes like he was last season, then, yeah, I don't see a reason for him to not stick at that SP1 for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, the control and command gains in such a short period of time are pretty remarkable. You know, the Brewers just showing themselves once again as just a player development powerhouse. I think he's probably the SP1 for me for the rest of the season too, you know. It's hard to forecast injury, so I'm not even going to wade into that. It's just, yeah, the strikeouts, like you said, just give him such a leg up that he can have slightly worse ratios than like Paul Skenes, but still be a more valuable pitcher just because of the strikeouts. I was looking at the leaderboards, and, you know, Dylan Cease isn't a qualified pitcher right now because he had a short IL stint. So Mizorowski has almost a 10 percentage point lead on the field in terms of strikeout rate for a qualified starting pitcher. So, you know, that's basically, he basically strikes out 30% more hitters, you know, on a per batter basis than any other starter so far this season. So when you're starting that far ahead from a strikeout perspective and obviously able to rack up, you know, volume from an innings perspective too, you know, it's hard to deny someone, and the results are obviously spectacular too. So yeah, he's truly breaking out, you know, turning in a Cy Young type season. It's pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, I mean, what's ridiculous is that he's doing with this with his four-seamer at 63% usage, which is just like crazy. You know, it's like, it's almost like he's a one-pitch pitcher, you know, to that point, right? Like, we usually see, you know, like a mix of fastballs, right, equal 60-70% of a player's repertoire, but he's doing this all with his four-seamer, but obviously you can get that up to like 103 consistently, you know, like, then yeah, there's no issue with using it that high. But his slider and his curveball this season have also been really solid from like the swing to strike rate perspective. Curveball at 11% usage has a 90% swing strike rate. The slider has nearly doubled its swing strike rate from last year, 9.5% to 17.3% this year. If you know, it's not like a lights out slider, but it's doing enough for him to basically mix it in with that four seamer. And even though, yeah, he does use that four seamer at 63% of the time, it's not stale because he does have these other pitches that can still produce strikes for him.
Yep, I think he's got just enough in the secondary department and in the fastball. You know, until people hit it, no reason not to keep throwing it, from my perspective.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on to Saturday. Taylor Made in San Diego was the hitter recap title from Kevin O'Brien, but we're actually going to talk about Mizorowski's teammate, Jackson Churia, who went 4-for-5 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. Churia was starting to look like his old self again. His batting average is now up to .314. His OPS is up to .936. And just a reminder, he was actually out for a couple months because of an injury that he suffered in the World Baseball Classic. So he's only had 173 plate appearances, whereas a good amount of the league is already kind of clearing 300 plate appearances. However, he is catching up, and Kevin O'Brien thinks actually that he could be an NL MVP dark horse if he keeps this up. You know, he has had, I believe it's 8 homers now on the season, which obviously doesn't look like a ton. I believe now he's actually at 10 homers and 5 stolen bases. So, you know, he's, for the last 2 seasons, Churia has had 2020 seasons, and, you know, decent average. Obviously the average for now, .314, which is pretty good. And assuming he does get another 2020 season again, do you think Churia kind of finishes the season as a top 10 outfielder? Does he kind of, you know, regain, you know, I don't know if there was any trust lost because of the injury, but just in a sense, you know, maybe looking forward to next year, does Churia kind of, you know, gain back that first round status in your mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's got a little bit of ways to go because of the time missed, but I like his chances of getting back into the top 10 at outfield. I do think it'll be the back end of the top 10 just because of the injury. I also, you know, he's a very well-rounded player and a well-rounded fantasy player, but I don't think, kind of similarly to Julio Rodriguez, I would say he doesn't have necessarily like a carrying fantasy tool. He hasn't even reached, you know, the 30-30 heights that J-Rod did once. So, yeah, he's showing some nice bat speed gain. He's making a lot more hard contact than usual, but he still does, you know, chase a decent amount and strike out a decent amount, which I think means that this batting average is going to fall under 300 pretty quickly. But I think he's poised to be, you know, an above average contributor in every single category. So, yeah, I like his chances of getting into that back end top 10 in outfield. But I do think next year, if the price is, you know, late first, early second round again, you know, I think I will probably be passing. But he is a really nice, well-rounded hitter, and is showing some growth. And he's still so young, right? He's what? He's 22 still, and this is his age 22 season. So, yeah, he's doing some pretty great stuff.
Yeah, it would be nice if Churia could get to that 30-30 mark. But, yeah, right now he's just not there yet. But, yeah, you mentioned he's young. There's still plenty of time for him to grow into, you know, being a more premier baseball player. But yeah, from a fantasy perspective, you know, I kind of agree. It's probably a little, end of first round's probably a little too rich, especially when there are other 30-30 guys probably out there. Yeah, Churia for sure, you know, at least is a very solid contributor to all 5 categories. And that's going to help in any sort of league, just maybe not a guy that you want to invest a first round pick into.
Yeah, but if you're a never pitching early type of guy, you know, given how 2 of the 3 aces have done so far this year, you know, I could understand going with Churia, but I don't know if that'll be my decision.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks to Jake Crumpler for the SB Roundup article, Sweet Taste of an Alvin Soroka, talking about Michael Soroka, who had a really solid start on Saturday. Unfortunately, I think I dropped him for that start, so I'm definitely ruining that a little bit. But we're not going to talk about Soroka. We're talking about Kevin Gausman of the Blue Jays, went against the Yankees in a no decision, 7 innings, 1 run, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Gausman had a little bit of a rough patch. He had 2 poor starts where I think he went 5 innings, gave up 4 runs, or something like that. Just basically not any sort of fantasy helpful starts. But now he's back. His splitter was actually really solid in this one. Got a gallows pole, a bunch of whiffs. He had 15 whiffs on the secondary alone. But yeah, the fastball, the four seam was really good, stealing strikes here and there. And then the splitter was, getting chases as usual. Still one of those pitchers who just shows how it's possible to be still be a pretty decent ace or a pretty decent pitcher at least with just 2 pitches. And yeah, he currently has 8 quality starts in 15 total, so pretty solid consistency numbers there. He's got a 3.41 ERA, a 1.03 WHIP, so okay ratios, maybe an ERA that we don't love, but the WHIP for sure, really like. But yeah, Gausman has a history of going up and down throughout the years, at least the past few years that he's been in Toronto. But now that he's gotten these 2 pad starts behind him and has like a really good one here against the Yankees, do you feel like he's a guy that teams can or fantasy managers can still trust as like an ace, or is he still one of those guys where not a premium streamer because he's definitely should be rostered everywhere, but more of a guy that you maybe still don't start him against like the most toughest matchups?
I think he's an SP2, and I think I'm starting him, every single time out, unless it's like, Sunday, and in your matchup, you really don't need any more volume and you don't want to take any ratio risk. But yeah, the skills look great. The strikeout minus walk is even up from last year. The stuff and the pitch usage, with like 92% fastball splitter is the same. And he was excellent last year, and he's been excellent so far this year. So yeah, he's got a couple of tough ones coming up. It's at Wrigley, which could be tough depending on the wind tomorrow, which I guess would be yesterday on the release date of this. And then he's got Houston next week, which will be a challenge too. But yeah, I've seen enough, lately and then just the last couple of years to make me feel confident starting him pretty much no matter what.
Yeah, the weird thing with Gausman is like even his bad season like 2 years ago where he had that really rough, I think it was like 10-game stretch in the middle of the season or maybe early middle of the season, he still finished that year with a 3.83 ERA, a 1.22 WHIP. I mean, the strikeout rate was really poor. That was kind of part of the reason why it was so bad. It was a 21% strikeout rate that year. But this year, yeah, it's up to 24.6%. He's also lowered his walk rate, as you kind of mentioned. And yeah, overall, just a really good. Yeah, it still looks really good for Gausman, even being at in his 8.35 season. So yeah, I don't really see any reason to not trust him, even though there's been maybe some slight undulations in his performances here. But nonetheless, yeah, it's hard to not have a reason to start him day in and day out.
Yeah, absolutely. Going to the 14th, Kyle Stanzl was on our hitter recap for Willy Castro. Willy hears you, Willy don't care, but I'm going to be talking about a different Will, and that is Wilson Contreras, first baseman for the Red Sox. He was 3 for 4 with 2 solo homers, and he's kind of been carrying the Red Sox, pretty putrid offense this year. It's felt like at times that he's the only guy producing for them, and it was 2 homers in this one off of Rangers ace Nathan Eovaldi. I believe that was on Sunday Night Baseball. And nobody was on base for either one of them, and Boston did lose 6-4, but it was not on Contreras. He's been great since he got traded from the Cardinals in the offseason, 16 homers and just 245 at bats, and a great batting average. He's well on pace to beat his career high of 24 home runs set in 2019 with the Cubs. And yeah, I was looking at, kind of his under the hood stuff when I was writing him up for this, and he's really just sold out for pull power, and it's paying dividends. He's pulling the ball in the air, I think it's like 27% of the time. Way more than he ever has in his career. Do you feel like this change of scenery is kind of what he needed to keep his fantasy value up, even though he's going from catcher to first base, which is just a less valuable fantasy position?
Yeah, I just want to take a quick look at park factors to see if there was any real difference. Obviously, we know Fenway is great for righties because of the monster in terms of like upping your average. And we've seen that from Contreras. He batted 257 last year. He's batting 294 this year. Homers are a little bit harder to come by, of course, because of the monster. But, Busch Stadium is only a 99 park factor. So it's not actually that bad for righties compared to compared to Fenway. So I think it's, yeah, it's at least the trying to get the pull in the air rate up that is working well for him. And it is impressive to see. He's at 16 homers now. His High watermark was 24, as you mentioned, in 2019. I think he's going to clear that pretty easily at this point. And then it's also impressive to see that the average is also going with him, even as he's selling out for power. I think partially because he's in playing so many games at Boston now. But yeah, nonetheless, really impressive to see from him. Did not expect to see this good of a season coming from Contreras when he went over to Boston. But yeah, it clearly is working out well for him.
Yeah, and I think that the average is maybe the more sticky part, even though he is on the high power pace. You know, we've seen a lot of guys who maybe weren't the greatest average hitters, you know, true talent wise, but, you know, having a lot of success in Fenway, whether it's like Xander Bogaerts or, you know, somebody like that. So, yeah, I think that he's been really solid and, yeah, just kind of a really steady contributor who's, you know, returning a lot of value if you waited on first base. On the pitching side, on the 14th, Nick was on the SP roundup with enjoying the collect-a-thon for Stephen Kolek. And we are going to be talking about the title man. He is on a great Vargas rule that kind of needs to be rostered in all 12 teamers and deeper. Cruised against the Astros with 7 1/3 scoreless, 5 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, 12 whiffs, and a 26% CSW on 97 pitches to get the win. And now over his last 6 games, which is nearly 40 innings, so he's eating a lot of innings, 1.59 ERA and a 1.01 whip. Just a great heater that justifies, you know, starting him until he struggles. It's the Cardinals and then looking like back-to-back starts against the Rays. But, you know, for Nick, it's also about the approach. And Kolek just has that deep arsenal that he's pounding the zone with, which is what you see in a lot of Vargas rules. So he's got the four-seam and the sinker that made up 40% of his offerings in this one. And then he also mixes in the slider, sweeper, cutter, and changeup. Each of them had at least a 63% strike rate. So he is really just filling things up with everything, even if the individual pitches themselves aren't necessarily that special. So Kolek doesn't have, you know, disgusting stuff or insane skills, but he has shown the last year and last year too that he's just capable of eating innings. So do you feel like he's a must roster? And given just the great ratios recently, how many bad starts would you need to see to, you know, bench or drop him in a 12?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about how many bad starts I need to see. I mean, I think back-to-back starts against the Rays is going to be a really tough test, right? That's one of the best teams in the AL, and the Royals are not. So I think also the fact that he's had 4 wins in 8 starts pitching for the Royals is impressive. I'd like to see how he fares after those 2 starts against the Rays. I think if both of those end up being games where he just gives up, you know, a bunch of hits, then maybe I start to worry, but Kauffman is a great park, I think, for pitchers still, even after they brought in the fences a little bit. His BABIP doesn't seem aggressively low. I mean, it is 250, but good for 81st percentile in the league. But it's, you know, I wouldn't say I'm worried about how lucky he's getting there. I mean, the worrying thing about him is just the fact that he doesn't really strike out a bunch of guys, but he does not walk a lot of guys either. So he just has, you know, really solid stuff that's able to induce outs, which I think is impressive. It's just nothing about his profile screams to me as like a guy who can sustain this for long because he's not getting the strikeouts. But nonetheless, I mean, that's kind of the thing that you go with Vargas rules. You kind of just go until they fall off. And I think if you saw 2 bad starts in a row, that's probably maybe where I start to maybe start to think about cutting bait.
Yeah, I think for maybe 2 bad ones or 1 just like completely terrible one. It is going on now though, almost a full season's worth between this year and last of him having like a low 3 ERA and a 1-1 whip, which is obviously super useful regardless of your format, even if the strikeouts are low. So yeah, I would need to see some struggles. It does look like one of the Rays matchups might end up being the White Sox instead, but they're also swinging it pretty well. So I don't know if that's, you know, too much of a better matchup either. So yeah, maybe some stiff tests on the horizon for him, but he's clearly, you know, really in a groove right now.
Yeah, he doesn't get it. He doesn't really earn a bunch of stuff with ground balls. I mean, he's got a decent ground ball rate, 48%. Does do a good job of like limiting fly balls. It's only at 21% for there. So, you know, that's probably adding to the fact of he's got a really good defense behind him. That probably helps a ton if you're able to induce ground balls like that. And you know, maybe that's part of the recipe of success is that, you know, he does a good job with the team that he's got behind him.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, moving on to Monday, Reap What You Crow by Ryan Amore, talking to PCA, who just has been going off on a heater ever since we talked about him on the podcast. So you can thank us all a little bit later. But we are going to talk about Dylan Cruz of the Nationals. Went 1 for 4 with a homer, a run, and 3 RBI in this game. Yeah, Cruz, let's just say the season has not gone very well. He started the season in AAA, And he's had 100 plate appearances so far this year in the majors, and it's not pretty. A 189 average, 230 OBP, and a 337 slashing line. So none of those numbers, not very good. But Ryan kind of thinks maybe the reason is just the plate discipline. A 36.7% chase rate kind of suggests those swing decisions might be part of his issue. He was on a 5-game hitting streak as of Monday. He is still kind of in the middle of a Nats lineup that's been surprisingly decent on offense this year. And Ryan still thinks he has plenty of upside. I mean, that's to be fair. Like Cruz, I believe, is still only 24. The problem is he just doesn't have any, has not had very much to show for this current sit in the majors. And because of that really putrid OBP at 230, he also can't get on base, so he can't really show off his speed either. I think he's only at like two or four stolen bases this season. Let me check quick. It's two stolen bases. And this is a guy who last year at least was able to steal 17 bases. And so when that OBP is just down that much, it just really hurts his ability to be a reasonable contributor, I think, in even the deepest of leagues. But yeah, what's your thought on Dylan Cruz? This is the guy that like you should keep your eye out for, like in a deep five outfielder league, or is it better just to, kind of forget about him and not think that there's really anything for him at least this season in fantasy?
Yeah, it's tough because I want to look at, the 192 BABIP and his ex-WOBA and all those type of things and feel like he is getting really unlucky, and he probably is, but at the same time, the super swing happy approach is really concerning. He's got a 2% walk rate and 100 plate appearances, so not a tiny sample, and that's not something like he always kind of walked around league average rates at the minors and in his first stint in the majors, but I don't know if he just feels like he's, making good contact, so he's swinging really aggressively. But yeah, it's a little concerning. I would say OBP leagues, it would have to be pretty deep for me to take the dive because of that aggressiveness. I think in standard formats, 12-team, five outfield, maybe I'm keeping him on my bench until I see a few good games and then plug him in here and there with, maybe a couple lefties in the scoring period. But yeah, I haven't quite seen enough, to feel comfortable starting him consistently, but the power speed blend is still there. I don't think either, he doesn't have like a great carrying tool though. I think the power and speed are both good, but the average downside is also pretty clear too. But he is playing every day for the Nats and they're a really good offense right now, so I think that there is some appeal there, but it's not, not everything that we've seen so far has been encouraging to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, some stats to throw at you. 55% swing rate, which is 92% percentile. So very high, swings at a lot of stuff. 39% O swing rate. Or sorry, swing rate being in the. Actually, I can't. No, I mean, he still swings a lot, yeah. But his O swing rate, 39%. So swings a lot of stuff outside the zone, but only makes contact 75% of the time on those swings. Which is only good for half, and then 59% O contact. So even though he swings a lot, he's still not making a ton of contact, which is just not a good recipe for success for him, unfortunately. All right, moving on to pitching, revisiting the Gore book. Thanks to Nick for the SB Roundup article, and we're going to talk about Mackenzie Gore again because my goodness, he's kind of the enigma for this season of is he a good pitcher, is he a bad pitcher? This start, pretty solid. 7 innings, 4 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts. So didn't get the quality start, but did give you 10 strikeouts. It's his fourth of five games with a CSW above 31%. So that's kind of impressive. And Nick thinks that Gore is back. The favorite part about his pitching that Nick liked was the changeups to right-handers. It got 4 out of 16 whiffs, and it worked well with his four-seamer as well. But he also had his cutter, which had a 36% CSW, was able to, steal strikes when he needed them, and then did not use his curveball that much, which Nick really liked. He basically only used it for first pitch strikes or trying to get a strikeout kind of late in the count. And so, yeah, that seems to be the really good. That's what Nick likes about his start here. Obviously, it's a good arsenal that he's using to his advantage over the last couple starts. And Nick kind of thinks like, yeah, I think this is good about Gore. You should be rostering him everywhere you can if he's available. But yeah, I don't know. I think Gore is one of those guys where I can get frustrated about a lot, and so I just generally avoid having him on a fantasy team. But yeah, what do you think? Do you think this is smoke, or is it just, or is he actually turning a corner here?
I don't think that he's really all that different than the guy we saw in the net with the Nats, who, have flashes of brilliance and then really kind of hurt you with especially bad whip games, kind of in succession. I think that really the biggest change here is just kind of the environment. Texas has been one of the best places to pitch the last few years, and they're typically at least a better team than the Nationals. So I think that that's really the biggest change here. The strikeout minus walk that we've seen from him this year, the velo, pitch usage generally is all kind of in line with, the guy who he was last year. He's on pace to have his best whip of his career, and he has a 1.31 whip. So I think that that just tells you, some of the things that he is working against. But he also does, he's a good source of strikeouts. So I think at home, he'll have his good moments where you can use him successfully. And I've had times definitely in one of my leagues where my pitching is pretty thin, where I feel like I have to start him and I'm worried about him, just hoping that it turns out okay. So yeah, I don't think that he's completely a different guy or anything like that. The home road splits, obviously it's a small sample, but they're very stark. He's got a 2.65 ERA at home and 5.75 on the road, and then his strikeout minus walk at home is 23%. It's 9% on the road. So yeah, I think home's kind of the way to go, and hopefully you can make, his production for your team be better than his overall production by using him in the right spots.
Yeah, and as much as we like to kind of say, like, hey, CSW is like a good indicator of how something is going, the problem for Mackenzie Gore is that out of those last five starts that we mentioned, two of those have been losses. One of them was a five-inning game where you had six strikeouts and two earned runs. So, fine, pretty decent. You'd be happy with that on your fantasy team. One of them was a really was a good was a gem. A win against Kansas City, 6.1 innings, four hits. No runs, but weirdly only three strikeouts. And then the start before that, six innings, one earned run, seven strikeouts, no decision, but really solid start there. So like, even though he's had a really decent CSW, out of those five starts, two of them you probably weren't like super happy with, even but he's still getting a lot of strikeouts, but the outcomes themselves are maybe not what you love. And so yeah, he helps you really well in one stat, but the ratios, he's gonna hurt you there, and he just really is not a good source of wins or quality starts too.
Yeah, this one at least, I think it was three runs in the first inning, and then he went six innings of one run ball with a bunch of strikeouts. So I saw the first inning and I was like, oh God, here we go again. He at least was able to, salvage it and make it a half decent outing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Buxton and couldn't remember if it was
Might have been
Cody
Josh Buxton,
Clemens or
like that.
yeah.
Somebody, yeah.
Yeah.
So going to the 16th, the Brian Identity by Griffey Geis was our hitter recap, and I'm going to be talking about Brian Reynolds, the title man here, and he's really just had a resurgent season. This was a great game for him, four hits, including two homers against the A's. Obviously, a little bit of cooking there in Sacramento. First two ABs were just singles, but then he took Jack Perkins and Hogan Harris deep in back-to-back innings. First one was a no-doubter, 104 miles per hour off the bat at 408, and then the second one more of a Sacramento special, only 97 off the bat with a 350-foot distance. He's coming off a down year, like I said, where he put his first sub-100 WRC plus on the board since the 2020 season. I mean, now he's on pace to post a bunch of career highs, including his 400 OBP and an elite 15% walk rate, and then his 143 WRC plus is right up there with his career best season. If his first 74 games of the season have been any indication, he could really blow some of his career highs out of the water. And yeah, what we've seen from Reynolds is kind of getting back to, vintage Brian Reynolds. He used to get drafted in the back of the top 100, which is a 2010 pace with a really solid batting average and good counting stats. But I think he's at 10 and 5 right now in homers and steals. So really, the fantasy value is coming from a good average and also nearly 100 combined runs and RBIs in a resurgent Pirates offense. So do you feel like this might be a good time to sell high because the counting stats are unsustainable? Or do you think, I drafted this guy like pick 200, I'm just going to ride with, the found value that I have here?
Yeah, I have Reynolds, I believe, in two leagues. Both of those leagues, I think I picked him off the waiver wire, if I'm not mistaken. Both were shallow-ish leagues, like 10 to 12 teamers. I think it's going to be hard to sell Reynolds, though, because I just look at his stats, and the first thing, obviously, you go to is just homers and steals, right? That's the first thing everyone looks at. And you're like, 10 and 5. That's not very good. And then the average is decent, 283, but it's not like an otherworldly, like, 300 that would attract people. So I mean, if I think if you could sell high, if you don't feel like this is the runs in RBI are sustainable, I think it's worth giving it a shot to see what you can get back. whether it's like a, a solid SP3 or something like that. But to me, like, I look at Reynolds and it just, he looks like a guy who I think other managers will see a potential drop candidate. I don't think people are going to be going to pick up Ryan Reynolds, unfortunately, because I look even on him, I have him on my fantasy teams, and even I look at his stats sometimes, and I'm like, ah, he's just all right. There's nothing really incredible about him. But that combined, oh, like that 50 runs of 47 RBI is really impressive. I don't want to take that away from him. 283 average, really, really solid as well. So honestly, I'd rather just keep him on my team at this point because I think whatever value you can get from Reynolds in a trade, it's just not going to match what his output's going to be.
Yeah, I think if you're not getting someone back that you think could be right on the edge of the top 100 for the rest of the season, then I think you just hold and enjoy the production. And the Pirates, I think the counting stats are a little bit unsustainably high, but they're tied for third in WRC plus. They're fifth in runs right now. I think especially against righties, they're really productive. So might be a little impacted by O'Neill Cruz and Connor Griffin being out, but they clearly, are able to score runs with, Lau and O'Hearn being huge acquisitions. So yeah, I think. His pace is obviously going to slow. He's not going to finish, probably in the top 50 like he is right now. But yeah, I think if you're not getting someone back that you view as a meaningful upgrade to your team, just hold it and enjoy the stats he gives you, very well-rounded production. On the pitching side, Noble Gasser was Nick's SP roundup for Robert Gasser, but I'm going to talk about Logan Gilbert, who pitched against my Orioles in this one, and one of two gems that the Mariners threw against the Orioles in this series that just wrapped up with Brian Wood today. But for Gilbert, he got the win, 7 innings of 1 run ball, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts, 19 whiffs, 33% CSW, and 94 pitches, so super efficient outing. And Gilbert's pushing for his Ace is Gonna Ace tag to return, and really just bullied Orioles hitters with the fastball in this one. 63% zone rate on the pitch, while everything else was 21% or lower. The slider got a lot of chases, though, 37% CSW and a 63% strike rate, despite only 5 out of 19 in the zone. Nick is still getting frustrated by Gilbert's kind of inconsistent approach in terms of, pitch usage and execution. And that's part of the reason why he hasn't regained that Ace is Gonna Ace status. But next couple of matchups on the horizon, it's looking like home against Boston, which is obviously really a struggling offense. And then at Cleveland, which, they're really weak right now, like we talked about, and then home against Toronto. So three easy starts there. And is he getting back to ace status in your eyes, or are you still a little reluctant to put that label on him?
Yeah, I mean, if you just took the last five starts in context, yeah, definitely ace status. It's just, the ERA looks bad just because of some really poor outings previously in the season. And so I think that's where I hesitate to say, like, oh yeah, he's definitely ace, because I think those performances can come back again for sure. Some issues, I hesitate to call these issues, but just some notable things. His strikeout rate is, basically right around career average after he had a really good strikeout rate last year. That, I mean, I think we pretty much said on the pod, it's very unsustainable. Had a 32% strikeout rate, and yeah, this year it's at 26%. But beyond that, like, that's kind of the biggest change in terms of stats. Everything else looks about the same. So I don't know if I'd call him an ace, but I'd call him a really, really good SP2 is maybe where I'd put him at. And he's going to have the occasional dud here and there. That's why his ERA is, not the pristine number maybe we'd wish it was, but at 3.43. But yeah, I think beyond that, he's still a really, really good pitcher. And if he's not an ace, he's at least just right below what an ace is defined as.
Yeah, I think so too. I think maybe the whip, puts him over the top. He's got a 103 this year in career, 1.06, which is really elite, but there is a little bit of ratio risk, and the strikeouts are, good, not great, like you said. Do you like him more than Gausman, or are they kind of, pretty parallel in your eyes in terms of at least rest of season outlook?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think I like him a little bit more than Gausman, but Gausman still could do some crazy stuff with just that two pitch mix. But I think I just kind of like Gilbert just a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I think I kind of used a home park maybe as a tiebreaker there, and slightly lean Gilbert
Yeah,
too.
true. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, well, moving on to Wednesday's games, the life and times of Jay Carter, referring to Carter Jensen. Thanks to Ben Solo for that hitter recap article. But we are going to talk about Kyle Stowers, who went 4 for 5 with a double, 2 homers, 2 runs, and 5 RBI. He went up against Andrew Painter in his last major league start, which is the reason why Painter got sent down to AAA. But yeah, Stowers hit two homers this one, as I mentioned, hit the hardest hit ball of the year at 110.8 miles an hour for his first homer. And yeah, just was hitting the ball super hard. Had a couple other hits for above 105 miles an hour. But overall, I mean, it was a good night for Stowers, but overall, his season just really hasn't been that solid. I mean, last year, he kind of had a breakout year with the Marlins. I believe he had 25 homers, I want to say. Yeah, 25 homers, was batting 288, had 61 runs, 73 RBI. But this season, it has not been very pretty. 23 runs, 7 homers, 27 RBI, a 226 average in 215 plate appearances. So he's basically not going to reach the numbers he had last year. Yes, he was dealing with a couple injuries here and there, but nonetheless, not a great season overall. But yeah, do you think Stowers right now, now that he's healthy, is he back on your radar in some of these deeper, five outfielder leagues? Or you need to see a little bit more from him to really even start thinking about adding him to a team?
Yeah, he's on my radar for sure just because of what he flashed last year. And he also has first base eligibility in some places or might be getting it soon as the Marlins have been rolling him out there, which is nice. But he's also sitting against some lefties, so not quite an everyday guy. So I think like 12 team five outfield, he's either like getting in and out of my bench or maybe streaming from the wire. So yeah, his season last year was awesome. It wasn't a full season though, quite. He did get injured in there. And he was really kind of teetering on the edge of, how much contact, how much whiff is acceptable to, really be a strong hitter. And we've seen that kind of rear its ugly head this year. With the Orioles before we traded him, he just had a ton of swing and miss in his game, even though he did have great power. And I think he's reined that in a little bit, but this year he's chasing more than he did last year, and he's actually swinging in the zone less. So the swing decisions are a lot worse. And when you combine kind of mediocre swing decisions with really bad contact ability, you get this batting average kind of drain, even if some of the power is still there. So yeah, I think that righty heavy weeks or scoring periods, you can start him and feel good that he'll get you some home runs, but Marlins offense, still isn't great. So I think with someone who's not quite a full-time bat in there, I'm not like running out to grab him, but yeah, he's showing his upside, with games and weeks like this. So.
Yeah, maybe the biggest stat to notice, last year had an 18.5% barrel rate. This year, 19.5%. So, really just a sharp decline in barrels, for sure. And that's, probably leading to some of the power outage. But like you mentioned, the strikeout rate going up also, and the whiffs going up is just not a good recipe for success.
Right. I mean, last year he was basically putting up like Giancarlo Stanton type barrel numbers. And, he's a guy who always had power, in his scouting report coming up, but it's just hard to, buy into a guy being able to do that, basically moving forward after just basically one, maybe one and a half seasons worth of sample in the big leagues.
Moving on to pitching. Thanks to Nick for the ode to Leahy Who. As we wrap up article referring to Kyle Leahy. We're going to talk about Nolan McLean of the Mets, though. He went up against Cincinnati in Cincinnati. Got the win there. Seven innings. No one runs, three hits, one walk, and nine strikeouts. Yeah, there's that start. Finally, we were waiting from McLean after, I feel like it was like 3 to 4 weeks of just like not great stuff. I think I even didn't start him for one of his starts a couple weeks ago just because he just had been on such a mediocre streak. But yeah, kind of an interesting start for him. He was sinker sweeper in this one. Sweeper had 39% strikes, so not great. The cutter, 40% strikes, also not ideal. But the four seamer was the main reason why this start worked out. Had 70% strikes there as well, sprinkled around the zone. So, keeping hitters guessing where it was going to go. And had some really good breakers that got strikeouts as well. Had a backdoor sinker here and there. Essentially, it was an approach that Nick doesn't feel is sustainable, right? His pitches that you were hoping to get strikes did not get strikes in the sweeper and the cutter. And this four seamer that, like, yes, it was all over the zone to get strikes, but maybe you say that's a little bit of erraticism as well. Don't love that. But ideally, the McLean that we're all hoping for is one who dominates with both sweeper and curveball, not just with the curveball. And the cutter being a pitch that can actually get strikes. And the four-seamer, used a little less liberally, only for lefties. and maybe striking out some righties as well. But McLean, previously had, I believe, a top 10 ranking in Nick's list. I think he's dropped since that point because of these series of bad outings. But yeah, how do you feel about McLean going forward for the rest of the season? Do you think he can kind of retain a status, or do you feel like he's kind of settling into the pitcher that he's going to be for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I would have him more kind of SP2 and maybe slightly behind Gilbert and Gossman, a couple other SP2s that we talked about today. It is funny though, because I expected, obviously regression from last year's amazing debut, but I expected him more in the whip department. But he actually, he has a 1.09 whip, which is still really solid. I was just worried about, some of his control and also approach to lefties. He's definitely still is much better against righties, but the four-seamer, he's been leaning on that a little bit more against lefties to, not have at least completely, terrible platoon splits. But yeah, overall, I still feel good about him. And I think, yeah, if he ends up as a kind of mid-tier back-end SP2 for a guy who's drafted, like pick 90, I think you're pretty happy with that result. So yeah, I think, maybe he's not just going to be completely dominant, from day one in his big league career, like it seemed like maybe based on how he did last year and then his first couple starts of this year. But yeah, overall I still feel decent about him over, as a pitcher. I think that those 2 6 and 7 earned run outings where he really, really struggled, I think that those are going to be an anomaly and you might only see like maybe one more of those this year.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly has the stuff, right? 28% strikeout rate, but like any other young pitcher, he struggles with the command, 9.3% walk rate. And I mean, based on kind of what Nick's analysis was for this start, he's still kind of figuring out his arsenal just a little bit, right? What works for him, what doesn't. If a pitch isn't working for him, does he have another one to fall back onto? In this one, it seemed to be the fastball, but in other cases, right, when he does have the sinker sweeper going, right, like he can be cooking, absolutely. But yeah, it's just kind of the growth, I think, that we're seeing from him. And just hopefully, we can work on that command to get the walk rate down a little bit. But yeah, for sure, his stuff at least is still really good, as evidenced by those strikeouts.
Right. If you want to be a little careful, with him and some matchups where it's a ton of lefties in the lineup, like that one where he got blown up by the Nats, I could understand that. But overall, I think you're seeing a really strong SP2 here.
All right, that is going to be it for player performances this week. We are going to move on to streamers, and we have a trio of guys from 2 weeks ago who kind of had mixed results.
Yeah, so 1-1-1 basically on those three streamers that you had. Walker Buehler had a 2 start, 9 2/3 with 9 strikeouts, and he got 1 win with 2 earned, but a 1.65 whip. So I think the ERA good, whip bad and 1 win. I see that as a push. Gage Jump with the loss, but not a disaster. He just got no decision in 5 innings, 6 strikeouts, 3 earned, and a 1.2 whip. And then Dustin May, we thought maybe it'd be a 2-step, but it was not. So he still is a win though because he threw 6 scoreless innings with a 0.83 whip and got the win. And then yeah, last week the 4 guys I recommended, 3 of the 4 of them haven't pitched yet, so we'll recap those next week. And then yeah, this week I'll have 4 guys for you. First one is Andre Pallante, 26% Yahoo, 44% CBS. He's in a really nice groove and he gets 2 home starts against the Diamondbacks and the Marlins. Both of those are below average offenses against right-handed pitching, and Arizona is actually the worst offense in the league against righties so far. And Pallante's shown some skills growth this year, especially strikeout minus walk, which is improving his whip, which is, typically his worst category. So I feel pretty good about that one. Next one's Griffin Jacks for the Rays, 33% Yahoo, 31% CBS. He gets a home start against the Royals, who also, are a struggling offense, even though I think tonight they did put up a bunch of runs. Next one is Martin Perez. He was recommended last week and got his schedule mixed up, but he still is looking like he's going to go at the Padres next week, and they're second to last in the league against lefties in WRC plus. Then lastly is Sean Burke. He's of the White Sox, 21% Yahoo, 34% CBS, and he gets 1 start against at home against that Cleveland offense that we mentioned is really struggling. And yeah, Burke is going into that one with some momentum because he got the win against the Yankees tonight. He came in after an opener, but finished the game. So 7 1/3, 1 earned, and 8 strikeouts. So yeah, hopefully he can carry that momentum into this Guardian start.
Yeah, and one thing to add about Dustin May, he had an incredible start on Monday. I believe it was a complete game shutout or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was like 2 base runners. It was pretty electric.
I was a little frustrated because I didn't realize he was available in my league, and I picked up Troy Melton instead, who got scratched from his start, and I realized I could have had Dustin May, which is really unfortunate. So, yeah, sometimes I need to remember to follow my own advice when it comes to streamers. But yeah, I have Sean Burke in one of my dynasty leagues. I think it's a little deeper league, but I've relatively enjoyed the experience with him this year. He hasn't been like, as incredible as his teammate. Is it Davis Martin, who's like basically kind of lights out right now for the White Sox? But nonetheless, Burke's been, reasonably decent this season. And yeah, that Cleveland team we already mentioned just does not have any sort of offensive power at this point. So really good team to stream against for sure.
Right, they might not strike out much, but it's hard to believe that they can really hurt you without those bats in the lineup.
Yeah, can't really get any RBIs right now, so it's a little tough for them. All right, well, that is going to be it for this week in fantasy baseball. Again, you can find us on Twitter at This Week PL. You can send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at John Cudd. You can find Patrick at pfitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us on the Pitcherless Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.